Chapter 15. Written Communication. How to evaluate someone when you can't meet in person. Many things are revealed in the way we write. Different colours have distinct writing styles. Some take the time to express themselves, while others keep brief. If you have the chance to read through a longer writing sample than the person in question has written, a report, a column, a letter, or a letter to the editor, you have lots to go on. Very often, it's possible to detect a colour in the written word. If you're a person of few words in speech, you can also be the same in your writing, and vice versa. If the only thing you have is an email, then you have to go on what you have. Let's say that you're replying to a customer's message. You want to prepare yourself properly. You look carefully at how his email reads. Is it factual? Is there any kind of personal touch? Is it short and concise? Or does it seem to have been written a little spontaneously? All of these little details are important signals that you can use to your advantage. As usual, there are plenty of exceptions, but there are still patterns to be aware of. Here are some examples of what this can look like. From christian.jonsson@teamcommunication.com to sina.sinerson@coco.net. Subject, meeting. Meeting tomorrow morning at 11. Be punctual! Exclamation mark in capital letters. K. What do you think? Is K screaming because he used capital letters? It's not clear. It could be that he just wanted to stress that the time for the meeting is important. Maybe he was rushing out somewhere. It doesn't matter to him that the person receiving the email might be put off by the abrupt style and the caps lock. As always, a red can live with that. Get a grip. He just wanted to be clear. Your action? Reply instantly. Be short and concise. One way might be simply to reply, OK. From christian.jonsson@teamcommunication.com to sina.sinerson@coco.net. Subject, meeting. Hello, Sina, what's up? Were you at the game last night? I saw that Lasse was there. He spilled drink all over himself and I thought I'd never stop laughing. Check out the picture I put on Facebook. By the way, I thought that we could sit down and chat about that customer tomorrow morning before lunch if it works for you. Is 11 o'clock okay? Ciao. Krilla. From christian.jonsson@teamcommunication.com to sina.sinerson@coco.net. Subject, meeting. Oh, I forgot to attach the photo. Anyway, here it is. Krilla. Even in writing, a yellow expresses himself in a very spontaneous and easygoing manner. He likes to share stories and keep things personal. Note the social babble about poor Lasse and his drink. A good laugh that must be highlighted to attract your attention. Your reply? There isn't any need to rush. But don't fail to respond or he'll feel insecure. Be cordial as well. Don't forget to thank him for the funny picture and mention that you laughed at his story. From christian.jonsson@teamcommunication.com to sina.sinerson@coco.net. Subject, meeting. I just wanted to remind you about the meeting tomorrow at 11. Hope it still works for you. I'm going to bring in some homemade cinnamon buns to have with our coffee. Have a good one. With kind regards, Christian. A softer, more personal tone. Christian had probably polished this email appropriately to make sure there was nothing controversial in it. Reminding people about meetings that were booked a long time ago previously can be perceived as slightly offensive by some people. So here we want to be certain that nothing can be misinterpreted. And how do you respond to this pleasant email? Be personal and benign in return. Express your thanks. You don't have to say that it will be great to have some cinnamon buns, but if you do, it won't do any harm. Then remember to take it easy and not to stress at the meeting. From christian.jonsson at teamcommunication.com to sina.sinnerson at coco.net. Subject, meeting. Good morning, Christina. Ahead of tomorrow's meeting with our client, I would appreciate it if you could familiarise yourself with the necessary background information. I've attached three documents relating to the issue. Greetings, Christian Jonsson. Plus 467-048-08080. Copy of dates and participants, .xls. IT strategy update, UGMT, .doc. Flyer template, 27th of November 2014, .doc. The original invitation to the meeting was sent out a long time ago. But you've already figured that out, right? An alarm was probably set on the computer to send out a reminder about the meeting a day beforehand. The text in the email is factual and doesn't contain even a trace of a personal touch. There is a little note reminding you that it's best to be well prepared. What's the best way to answer this blue email? Confirm that you've received it along with the files. Say that you'll get back to him if you have any questions after reading through the material. And know that the sender assumes you'll read the whole thing carefully. Chapter 16. What makes us as mad as hell? Temperament can reveal everything about a person. At the end of this book, I will present you with a history lesson. It is all about Hippocrates' four temperaments, describing the same differences that this book is all about. It's possible to draw conclusions about someone's behaviour based on his temperament. By temper or temperament, I don't just mean what frustrates a person, but rather how he reacts when something unexpected happens. Another way of saying this might be to talk about a person's disposition. It can be how he reacts to changing circumstances and what sort of energy he has. But yes, anger is a good and exciting gauge by which to judge a person's colour. Moreover, it's situational. What upsets one person may not upset someone else in the least. By observing how someone reacts when things go wrong, you can get some important clues. Let me give you an example of a quick diagnosis. What the hell? For the sake of simplicity, let's compare different temperaments to different types of drinking glasses. I would suggest a shot glass for a red temperament. But, you might say, that little glass doesn't hold much. Indeed it doesn't. And many reds function like that too. It doesn't take much for them to lose their temper and erupt. It could be about traffic jams, missed phone calls, someone moving too slowly on the escalator, not getting their own way. That someone is just generally dense. Remember that of all the colours, they are the ones most often surrounded by idiots. For a red, there are many reasons to be irritated. A red's strength is that when they explode, they rid themselves of any anger or irritation they've been feeling. They erupt briefly, but it doesn't last. The shot glass may be quick to reach capacity, but it doesn't take long to empty it. They simply empty the shot glass of anger and frustration, and they're back to being themselves. I'm not referring to how those around a red perceive things. The advantage is that for all their raging, it usually subsides quite quickly. A red can rarely manage to be angry for long. He blurts out what he wants to say, and then he moves on. Sure, he can leave many confused people around him, but that's their problem. He's finished with the episode. Then something deeply upsetting happens again, and he just erupts. And again. And again. Imagine that you pick up the shot glass and pour it out over your desk. Not nice, but quite manageable. You can always clean it up. But remember, the shot glass fills up just as quickly as it was emptied. It will happen again. Many perceive a red's temperament as totally unpredictable. It can erupt at any time. Nevertheless, I don't think it's that unpredictable. If you know the person in question, you probably also know what triggers his anger. However, it's important to know that a red doesn't consider himself an angry person. He's just given someone a piece of his mind, or maybe raised his voice at him. Again, it's just a way of communicating. But to a green, it might seem that a red is angry even when he's just sharing his opinion. So much is in the eye of the beholder. It's common that many people simply back off to avoid confronting the red and triggering his anger. But by letting their anger get the best of them all the time, reds miss out on a lot of feedback. I am very upset. Do you even hear what I'm saying? Even the cheerful yellow loses his temper. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Although yellows generally have a sunny, optimistic disposition, they have a temper as well. Like reds, they are active, perceptive people. This means that they have a lot to react to. And if you're quick thinking and your tongue sometimes gets away from you, well then, things can happen. What comes out your face's front door isn't always well thought out. Because yellows are very expressive and emotional at the same time, you'll know in advance when the mercury starts rising. An observant person won't have any problem noticing that a yellow is on the verge of bursting. The look in his eyes intensifies. His gestures become impetuous. His voice is raised. All this happens, but it happens gradually. If the red temperament is like a shot glass, then we can liken the yellow temperament to an everyday drinking glass. It holds more, and it's easier to see when it's full. The level rises a little at a time, and if you're paying attention, you'll have no problem observing this as it happens. Now, if we take the tumbler of milk and pour it out all over your desk, what's the result? It will be a lot messier and much soggier than when we poured out the shot glass, right? Many important papers are destroyed, and it requires more than a single paper towel to dry it all up. But we can still handle the situation. Even this temperamental outburst can be managed without too many serious complications. There are also advantages in a yellow's temperament. He'll feel guilty that he laid into someone close to him. Colleague, family member, neighbour, or maybe even you. So he'll make an extra effort to be kind the next time you meet. He'll have an uneasy conscience, something a red wouldn't be able to comprehend. If a person happens to be a combination of red and yellow, things can get tough. In this case, there's a lot of ego in the room, and you won't quite know what's happening. Depending on the driving forces and motivational factors the individual may have, he can assert his own position almost to the point of absurdity. Genuine yellows can let their egos get in the way most of the time. The advantage, however, is that due to their bad memory, they don't hold grudges for long. They quickly forget that there were any problems, an ability that can make greens and blues find yellows to be a little bit too exciting. Beware the fury of a patient man. Beware indeed. Do you recognise this old saying? The person who coined it probably had a green in mind. You may never have seen a green lose his temper. It may very well be that your good friend, the friendly and gentle pal you've never had a serious argument with, hasn't ever shown even a shred of bad temper. Does that mean that this is a person who can't get angry? Not at all. It just means that instead of turning his temper outwards, it's oriented in another direction. Inwards. I would liken a green's temperament to a 50-gallon beer barrel. Can you imagine how many shot glasses it would take to fill it? We could fill, fill, and fill even more before we even start covering the bottom of it. Many greens function like that. They receive and accept without objecting. This is very much connected to their desire to avoid conflict, but also to their inability to say no. They simply agree because it's easier that way. Does this mean that greens don't have their own opinions? Not at all. They have just as many opinions about things as anyone else. They just don't talk about their opinions. And this is often the problem. They fill the barrel. Week in and week out, a green accepts one perceived injustice after the other. Note that I said perceived. It may take several years before the barrel is full. Now, take this barrel, lift it up, and pour the contents out over your desk. What happens? Everything will be washed away. The water in the barrel will not only wash away everything on your desk, even the desk itself and you along with it will go out with the flood too. There's no stopping it. You said that I didn't finish the project on time. Really? Really? Last week you said that I didn't do it well enough. Now you tell me this. A year ago you promised me a new office, and it still hasn't materialised. And when I was hired here back in 1997, you said the same thing. And now, let me tell you, everything has to come out. Just make sure that you're not the spark that sets it all off. The problem is large scale. Greens don't release any anger or frustration, but control their emotions so as not to create trouble or stand out. But they feel and experience just as much as everyone else does. They just lack the natural tools to release everything. But we can help by becoming facilitators. We can ask questions, invite them in, and look for signals. Look at their body language to see if there are signs of disapproval. Create a healthy environment around a green so that he becomes comfortable enough to say what he thinks so that he doesn't have to continually compromise his position. Otherwise, he will turn all his frustration inwards. And we know what this kind of stress can do to a person. I have my own private theory, which I certainly cannot prove scientifically, but I suspect that this may be the main reason why greens suffer burnout. They carry anxiety, anguish, and even anger for so long that it eventually makes them ill. It's a noticeable problem that should be taken seriously. A complaint a day. During an extremely stressful period in my earlier career in the banking sector, I once heard a comment about a blue. All of us were working every day and night, and many of us were showing the stress. Frustration was hanging in the air. Our credit controller was in the middle of the whole thing. Nothing got to her. She never even acted stressed. Her face was absolutely indecipherable, and her gestures were as limited and moderate as always. While the rest of us ate our lunch on the go, she took her full 60 minutes and ate in peace and quiet. It was as if nothing could disturb her peace. Then, one of my yellow-red colleagues said, "She's not normal. She doesn't have any feelings in her body." Back then, it sounded logical to me. But when you think about it, it can't be true. Blues simply have less need to communicate than greens. So they simply don't do it. Some things are turned inwards, even for blues. Those who are quick thinkers may wonder if blues run the risk of burnout just as much as greens do. Not at all. They have a system to keep stress under control. Metaphorically speaking, blues have as big a beer barrel as greens have. But there is one crucial difference. At the bottom of the barrel, there's a handy little tap. This tap gives a blue a valve to release part of the contents of the barrel. He can regulate the pressure whenever he wishes to. Moreover, the tap leaks. It's not tight enough to create a perfect seal, and small drops drip most of the time. A blue's dissatisfaction comes out in the form of tiny grumblings. "Just look, someone has misplaced the pen again, typical. Now I'll have to finish this off myself. As usual, I get the most boring task. There's no structure here, typical." And so he goes on. His pinpricks affect those around him. But what they hear all the time is just a muttering trumpet. The embers don't fan into a fire. We interpret it as perpetual whining. But the discontent is real. And because a blue isn't sufficiently active to instigate something, he'll argue about things rather than doing something about them. It's all based on complaints that others should see what he sees, that he doesn't have any authority to act, or that he's simply in a bad mood. But for him, this is a great way of keeping the pressure under control. So the barrel will never need to be emptied out over somebody's desk, and thus serious catastrophes are avoided. The way to manage his nagging is to ask counter-questions. Ask for concrete examples. Ask for suggestions for improvement. It may in fact be the case that the blue has solved the problem that is plaguing him, but that he needs a straight question in order for him to step forward and suggest a solution. What can you do about the fact that people don't get pissed off in the same way? With these simple observations in mind, you can quickly form an idea of what type of person you're dealing with. Pay attention to how he reacts under stress and pressure. But, at the same time, remember that no system is perfect. These are only indications, and they apply only to individual colours. Besides, as I wrote previously, different situations can give rise to completely different forms of conduct. Generally speaking, the more important a particular thing is for a certain person, the stronger his reaction will be. See for yourself. If someone insults your neighbour, you might think it was unfair. But you don't make a big scene out of it. However, if someone were to insult your husband or wife, you would be absolutely furious. That's just one example. There are many levels and degrees of difference to reflect on. Chapter 17. Stress Factors and Energy Thieves. What is stress? Anger is one thing. Stress is another. Sometimes one is a consequence of the other, but not always. Some people become angry because of stress. Others become stressed because of anger. When we speak about stress, we often mean the feeling of having too much to do and too little time to do it. There's not enough time to do everything at work. And then on top of that, factor in the time needed to go to the gym, meet with friends, spend time with family, do various kinds of recreational activities, oh, and maybe sleep. However, the stress that makes us truly suffer is often due to things apart from lack of time. If you feel pressure and have high expectations about what you will do and how you are meant to be, you can become stressed, even if you aren't really pressed for time. Pressure, demands and expectations create stress and can make you feel self-critical and powerless. You may find it difficult to sleep or may feel physical pain in your body. Simply put, the feeling of stress arises when we experience greater demands and expectations than we can cope with. Different people react differently to stress. What a surprise! Seriously though, all of us react differently to stress. Different people can experience the same event in different ways, and a person can experience similar events differently at different times. The things you've been through in the past and how you're feeling right now all have an effect on how you act and react. If you're well rested and feeling fine, you could experience a tough week at work as an invigorating challenge, despite your heavy workload. But if you're tired and feeling down on yourself, you may experience the same week as something horrible and demoralizing. How does your color affect your stress? It says nothing about your stress threshold, that is, how much stress you can bear. But it can say something about what stresses you and how you'll react to stress. Previously, I mentioned the concept of driving forces. Whatever forces motivate me to get up out of bed every morning, dash to work, and go the extra mile. This book doesn't deal with this dimension. But it's easy to see that we become stressed when we feel that we're spending too much time on the wrong things. Once you've understood what the most important stress factors in your life are, you'll be better equipped to avoid them when possible. If you're a manager responsible for a number of people and you know their behaviour profiles, you can avoid the worst pitfalls. A great deal of stress can be avoided if you know how, and you can retain the group's productivity. The rest of the chapter is written with an element of irony, and I urge you to listen to it in that way. Stress factors for reds. If you would like to stress out a red, you can try one of the following to lower his self-confidence. Take every form of authority away. Not being involved in decision-making is really difficult for a red. He always believes that he has better ideas, and so he also believes that he should be the one in charge of the project. Achieve no results whatsoever. If we're not making immediate headway, then all our work has been a waste. Such an insight can trigger severe stress reactions in a red, and those around him should be on their guard. He'll look for scapegoats. Eliminate any kind of challenge. If everything is too easy, it becomes boring. Red behaviour hinges on one thing: the ability to handle problems and difficult challenges. If there are no problems to solve, then reds will lack stimulation. They'll become passive, believing that they have absolutely nothing to do. They can slow down the pace, and this can be difficult to reverse. Waste time and resources and work as inefficiently as possible. Just sitting around doing nothing is a waste of time. Not that this is necessarily what we're actually doing. But, in the mind of a red, if you don't get the maximum productivity out of your time, it's wasteful and particularly stressful from a managerial perspective. He's probably evaluated on the organisation's efficiency. Make sure that everything becomes a routine. Mundane and repetitive tasks are the kiss of death for a red. It's simply boring. Reds lose their concentration and will find something else to do. Routine work is not what they're good at. They're lousy at details, and they know it. Someone else needs to take care of the dull, routine work, because a red believes that he has a better understanding of the big picture. Make a bunch of stupid mistakes. Mistakes are one thing, but stupid mistakes, well, that's something completely different. It's so overwhelmingly unnecessary. If a red believes his colleagues are brainless, he gets crazy. Why don't they understand what they're supposed to do? How hard can it be? Give him no control over others. A red's need for control can be extensive. It's not about controlling facts and details. They want to control people. What they do, how they do it, and so on. Without this control, a red gets very frustrated. Tell him regularly to cool down or lower his voice. They get crazy when people say that they're angry when they're not. They will always be a little more hot-tempered than average. But this doesn't actually mean that they're angry. And it's precisely this accusation that can get them to become angry. Really angry. What does a red do when he gets stressed and feels pressured? He blames everyone else. As a red is often surrounded by idiots, it's easy for him to single out scapegoats. And he can easily overdo things when he wants to take someone to task for having made a mess of things. Be aware. That's my advice to you, because you'll feel the sting of his wrath. Reds are always more demanding than other colours. They expect a lot from themselves, and they expect a lot from you. When under stress, they're also excessively demanding and driven, much more than usual. The red will shut out his other colleagues. He becomes closed, burrows into the task at hand, and works even harder. Remember that his anger and frustration is lurking just beneath the surface. So please be careful about what you do in his presence. Can I help reds to manage their stress? If you have the authority to give a direct order, the answer is simple. Ask them to get hold of themselves. It actually works. Another way to make it easier for reds in stressful situations is to send them home and tell them to do some physical exercise. Anything to burn some of that frustrated, restless energy. Send them to a place where they can run in some kind of competition, spending their energy on winning something that will be of no importance to the group. When they come back, most of their aggression will have dissipated. Stress factors for yellows. If for any reason you would like to get a yellow to feel stress, try one of the following to get him off balance. Pretend he's invisible. You remember a yellow's driving impulse, right? Look at me. Here I am. If you want to get him off balance, simply make him feel invisible. If he's not visible, then he doesn't exist. He feels ignored and overlooked, and this is guaranteed to cause stress. Become very skeptical. Any person manifesting lots of skepticism is very negative. something that stresses yellows. They want to see the positive and the light, and consider even everyday realists to be prophets of doom. Pessimism and negativity effectively kill yellow's enthusiasm and cause them to feel tense. Structure work as much as possible. Just like reds, yellows shun routine, repetitive tasks and jam-packed schedules. They happily create schedules for others, but they can't follow them themselves. Force them into one of your plans, and you'll see how your yellow friends will begin to unravel. Isolate him from the rest of the group. For a yellow, the absence of someone to talk to is perhaps the worst thing ever. It's the end of the world. Because they need to talk, there must be someone there to listen. Being trapped in an office space with only a desk for company is a punishment worse than death. It's like being deported to Siberia. Make clear that it's inappropriate to joke at work. No joking around and no sense of humour. Is this a funeral parlour? I once got exactly that comment from a yellow who discovered that consultants didn't have time to monkey about. She was very stressed out by all the seriousness and left before her probation period was over. Push a yellow to think carefully beforehand. Twice. Suppressing a yellow's spontaneity is like holding down the lid on a saucepan when the milk is boiling over. It simply doesn't work. It creates a terrible mess, and everyone gets involved when yellows, loudly and intensely, invite everyone else into their stress spiral. Remember that a yellow's stress will always be noticed. Don't believe otherwise. Continuously squabble and fuss about insignificant things. Having to face incessant confrontations is exhausting. This is something of a paradox, because yellows aren't afraid of conflict, like greens. But if there's too much bickering, it will disrupt their desire for fun and positivity, which causes stress. They can cope with squabbling, but when it becomes too much, yellows won't be at the top of their game, and they lose their usual luster. Try a little public humiliation. A yellow who has been given negative feedback in the presence of others won't be a pleasant sight to behold. It's enough to make him never speak to you again. Moreover, he'll also become incredibly defensive, and you'll achieve nothing at all. What does a yellow do when he gets stressed and feels pressured? Be prepared for the fact that he'll draw attention to himself even more than usual. His ego makes it impossible for him not to seek out more attention and affirmation, since he has to compensate for the negative feelings of stress. This means that he'll actively look for attention, which makes him feel better. The risk is that he'll talk too much and force himself into the centre of everything. Maybe you thought that this wasn't possible, but he also runs the risk of becoming excessively and unrealistically optimistic. You've never experienced a real challenge until you've tried to cope with a truly stressed-out yellow. He'll come up with plans that are so wild and outlandish that not even he can believe them. This is just a natural coping mechanism for him. Can I help yellows to manage their stress? Let a yellow organise a party. He urgently needs to meet people in social contexts. He can sink very deep into his own misery if he remains under stress for too long. When things are at their worst, suggest a pub crawl, a party, or why not just a simple barbecue? It doesn't need to be fancy, but make sure he gets to enjoy himself for a while. Also, make sure that it's fun. Stress factors for greens. If you for any reason would like to get a green to feel stress, I propose the following unpleasant things. Take every form of security away from him. Give him tasks that he's never done before without explaining anything whatsoever to him. But at the same time, expect perfect implementation. Leave him alone in meetings with people who place unreasonable demands on him. Don't support him when things heat up in a conversation. Send an angry red to rant at him. The stress will soon follow. Leave lots of loose ends. Unfinished tasks and loose ends are deeply disturbing. Greens like to know how things fit together, and when they don't understand how the process works, it won't go well. Unfinished projects, things that have been started but are drawn out without any end in sight, really mess things up for greens. This is why yellows are phenomenal at causing stress for greens. Hang around him constantly. If a green doesn't get his private space, if there's nowhere he can withdraw from the world, he gets very stressed. He likes other people, of course, but he needs to be alone with himself also. If this isn't possible, then he can't think anymore. Make lightning-fast changes and unexpected changes of direction. This is the speciality of reds and yellows. Quick decisions that they don't always explain. Greens are miserable when they're forced into making unexpected and rapid changes, and they often respond by ending up in a state of absolute indifference. The worst kind of change is when a green gets an order in the morning, and just as he begins to reflect on how he will do it, a counter-order comes. Ask him, would you be so good as to redo the whole thing from beginning to end? Having to redo a task is synonymous with failure. If something must be redone, it can only be because your work wasn't good enough the first time. In other words, negative feedback. By extension, this means that you're not good enough as a person, which, of course, is extremely stressful. Tell a green, look here, we can't agree on absolutely everything. Disagreements in a work group or in the family inevitably lead to stress. Only troublemakers enjoy conflict. Friction in the most important group, the family, is particularly serious. A green won't know what he should do. Push him into the spotlight. Under no circumstances will greens want to take centre stage when they're in larger groups. Groups of more than three people would be considered large groups, unless the green knew everyone very well. If you force a green into such a situation, he'll just stare at his feet. Everyone can see how uneasy he is, and the rest of the group will also be stressed. Not good. What does a green do when he gets stressed and feels pressured? He becomes very reserved and almost cold. His body language becomes rigid and closed. And if you're the one who triggered his stress, he won't have anything to do with you. Some greens can exhibit strong apathy. They become cold and unsympathetic, even towards people whom in normal circumstances they care very much about. They also become very hesitant and uncertain. Stress makes greens insecure and afraid of making mistakes. It can be at work, but also at home. If a child gets sick, a green becomes passive and just looks on, because he's afraid of doing the wrong thing. He'll also internalise the blame for the situation and may become completely closed. At work, it may be slightly different. It depends. Many Greens end up in a rut of obstinacy or stubbornness, provoking those around them by refusing to change anything. Even when they see that a particular method is not working well, they can refuse to act. It seems strange, but the typical Green stubbornness gets the upper hand and prevents them from doing anything. Can I help Greens to manage their stress? Allow them to do nothing. Give them free time for things like gardening, sleep, or other forms of relaxation. Maybe something like sending them off to a movie. Not with a large group of people, but possibly on their own. Or giving them a good book that takes 2 days to read. They don't really want to do anything. Let them do nothing until the stress subsides. Then they'll be back to their normal selves. Stress factors for blues. If you, for any reason, would like to get a blue to feel stress, just upset every one of his calculations. Tell him, you don't know what you're talking about. You may think that blues don't take criticism personally, but if they believe that the criticism is untrue and unfounded, it can be very hard on them. Not because they're afraid of conflict, or that your relationship will suffer, but because their sense of perfection is being besmirched. Have the management team make a spontaneous decision. A blue is often okay with change because he doesn't ever consider anything completely perfect. But he needs to know the motivations behind the change. If it's not in the plan, then it's unplanned. And a lack of planning indicates poor structure. Not good. Inevitably, this leads to headaches. Tell him, this could be risky or uncertain, but we're going to go ahead anyway. There's a certain amount of risk in everything. A blue sees risks everywhere. If a red were to say that jumping from a plane without a parachute is a huge risk, a blue would say that it's risky to buy a new lawnmower. You never really know what can happen. And the faster things go, the greater the risks become. Surprise him with something like, "Your in-laws are coming over unannounced. Fantastic." It's a matter of order and structure, of working at a relaxed pace, of renovating the kitchen according to a clearly established plan. If half the family were to drop in all of a sudden, it would upset everything. You should never try to surprise a blue. Since he may not have communicated his own plans completely, you can create quite a problem. Say, "Whoops-a-daisy, what happened here?" Mistakes are made by blockheads and careless people. Blues don't make mistakes. So when everyone else makes a mess of things and disrupts his plans, a blue might simply close the door and refuse to listen. He doesn't want to hear that the project has crashed. He just wants to keep doing his part, even if that task no longer makes any sense. Tell him, "Forget about the bureaucracy, let's innovate." "Don't you have any imagination? We have to be a bit more flexible here." This is a great way to get a blue to lose his footing at work. People who break the rules and go against the regulations are to be regarded with suspicion, and you need to keep them on a short leash. If a blue realizes that he's in the hands of an organization that pays no attention whatsoever to proper procedures, he can show considerable resistance. Remind him, "We simply need to take bigger risks." A variation on the preceding point. Right is right, And proper preparation is the be-all and end-all, the alpha and omega. It even says so in a book. So when a blue can't prepare himself in his sometimes extremely cumbersome way, it triggers stress. He's the opposite of spontaneous, and you simply can't force a blue to respond to a situation before he's had time to acquaint himself with the subject. He'll have so many reservations, he won't be any use. Surround him with overly emotional people. Nope. Sloppy sentimentality is downright unpleasant. It's messy and awkward, and a blue doesn't like it. Logic is what counts, and if you overlook this, he'll find it very trying. He'll make himself scarce, and he'll never forget that you're an overly emotional person who doesn't use your brain in the same way he uses his. What does a blue do when he gets stressed and feels pressure? He becomes excessively pessimistic. Oh, yes. It actually gets worse than usual. Suddenly, everything becomes pitch black, and he falls into a pit of despair. Lethargy is common, and nothing is of interest anymore. Gloom and doom will rain down on all of us. He also gets unbearably pedantic. When they feel stress, many people increase their pace in order to compensate. Not a blue. He stomps on the brakes. Now isn't the time for making any mistakes. Those around him can expect constant criticism. He'll suddenly point out every little mistake he observes. And there are quite a few. He might also become an unbearable know-it-all. Can I help blues to manage their stress? They need privacy. They must be given time and space to think. They want to analyse the situation and understand the connections, and they need to be given time to do just that. If you give them space, they will come back. Eventually. But if they fall too deeply into a funk, you may need to offer them more proactive help. Conclusion. What can we learn from studying different people under stress? When under stress, an individual's normal conduct and behaviour are reinforced and exaggerated. A red becomes even tougher and more aggressive towards those around him. A yellow becomes more sulky and unstructured. A green becomes even more passive and non-committal than usual. And a blue can become completely closed and split hairs so thin that they're not even visible to the naked eye. The most important thing is to avoid stressing people unnecessarily. Of course, you knew that already. But it can be helpful to understand what actually causes stress for each profile. To push a red is not as stressful as pushing a green or a blue. On the contrary, you have to push a red for him to bounce back. If everything were to go smoothly, he would just get bored. The situation, your profile, the time of day, the level of work, the group, the weather. Lots of things determine stress in our lives. But if you pay attention, it will work out perfectly. Chapter 18. A short reflection through history. People have always been like this. The background to everything you've heard so far. This chapter explains how I arrived at the research that forms the basis of the information in this book. If you're not interested in history or references or research or things that take time from your otherwise full life, you can skip this chapter. For everybody else, a long time ago. In all cultures, there has always been a need to categorise people. When the Stone Age period was over, and we became more reflective as people, we discovered that all over the world, people were different. What a surprise. But how different are people, really? And how have those differences been described? There are probably as many methods as there are cultures on Earth. But I'll share some examples. The Greeks. Hippocrates, who lived 4 centuries before Christ, is considered the father of medicine. Unlike many other physicians of that time, he wasn't superstitious. He believed that disease originated in nature and didn't come from the gods. For example, Hippocrates believed that epilepsy was caused by a blockage in the brain. Nowadays, this is common knowledge, but back then, it was revolutionary. Humoral pathology, or the theory of the 4 humours, or 4 bodily fluids, has to do with the 4 temperaments. According to Hippocrates, our temperament is the fundamental way we react. It's our behaviour, or our natural frame of mind. Our temperament controls our behaviour. Hippocrates believed that your health is good when the 4 humours, blood, yellow bile, black bile, and phlegm, are in balance. When we vomit, cough, or sweat, for example, the body is trying to rid itself of one or more of these substances. The word chloe comes from Greek and means yellow bile. Therefore, a choleric person, red, is controlled by yellow bile, or the liver. Fiery and temperamental, choleric people sometimes frighten those around them with their powerful ways. Choleric can be translated as hot-blooded. The Latin word sanguis means blood. A sanguine person, yellow, is controlled by the blood, by the heart. Creative and happy-go-lucky, he spreads positive vibes around him. Full of blood, and therefore optimistic and cheerful, he has an airy manner. A synonym for a sanguine person is an optimist. A phlegmatic person, green, gets his influences from the brain. Phlegm means nothing more than mucus. Mucus is viscous, which symbolises a phlegmatic person's temperament. A phlegmatic person is sluggish and slow in movement. Finally, a melancholic person, blue, has an excess of black bile. The Greek melaina chloe simply means black bile, found in the spleen, and is therefore often perceived as melancholic and gloomy. A common synonym for a melancholic person is a pessimist. And there we have Hippocrates and his theories in a nutshell. The ancient people with an eye for colour. The Aztecs. The Aztecs were a powerful people who lived in central Mexico from the 14th century to the 16th century. They are known for their incredibly advanced civilization and impressive temples. When they tried to divide people into different categories, they used something they knew well. The 4 elements, fire, air, earth, and water. To this day, the 4 elements are used to describe different frames of mind. But nobody really knows if the Aztecs were the first to actually come up with this idea. But we do know for a fact that they used this idea, because they left carvings illustrating this approach. Fire people, red, were exactly as it sounds. Fiery, explosive, a bit hot-headed. They were warrior types who took to the sword to get their own way. Leaders. Air people, yellow, were different. They were also determined, but considerably more easygoing. They swept in like a captivating wind, kicking up a little dust in the process. Earth people, green, worked for the village, for the collective. They had to exemplify stability and security. They were there to create long-lasting things, to build for the future. What about water people? Blue. Water was an element the Aztecs had respect for. Water can crush everything in its path. But you can also bottle it, if you know how to do it. Quiet and secure, water people observed everything that was happening. As you can see, these divisions bear quite a resemblance to the theories propounded by Hippocrates. They're only different names for the same thing. William Moulton Marston. William Moulton Marston created a systolic blood pressure test that was used in an attempt to detect fraud. The discovery resulted in the modern lie detector. But Marston was also the author of essays in popular psychology. In 1928, he published his work Emotions of Normal People, in which he investigated the differences in the behaviour patterns of healthy people. Earlier, both Jung and Freud had published studies involving mentally unstable people. But Marston was a kind of pioneer who provided the foundations for what became known as the DISA model, the model that is the basis for this book. A few years after discovering Marston's work, in the 1950s, Walter Clark developed the DISA concept based on Marston's observations. As you've seen, this is a model used to categorise the different types of human behaviour. His work has been an endless source of valuable insights about behaviour and human interactions, but it has not been without its critics. However, a great deal of work has been done since Marston's days, and over the years, many other people have been involved in fine-tuning the DISA tool. Marston found a way to demonstrate how people were different. He noted distinct differences between personalities, which formed the basis for the model used in this book. Nowadays, we use the following divisions. Dominance produces activity in an antagonistic environment. Inspiration produces activity in a favourable environment. Submission produces passivity in a favourable environment. Compliance produces passivity in an antagonistic environment. The four letters D, I, S and C, dominance, inspiration, submission and compliance, form the acronym of the DISC profile that is used throughout the world. Marston used the word compliance. However, in this book, I render this as analytic ability, as that better describes the type of individuals. The dominance trait in any given individual relates to how he approaches problems and deals with challenges. Inspiration refers to a person who likes to influence people. A person with this trait will always be able to convince others. In simple terms, you could say that dominance is about acting and inspiration is about interacting. The degree of stability is measured primarily by how receptive an individual is to change. A strong need for stability means a person is resistant to change, while someone who enjoys change will have a lower need for stability. This leads, of course, to a number of specific behaviour patterns, like a nostalgic belief in the long-lost good old days, for instance. Finally, analytic ability shows how willing someone is to follow rules and regulations. Of course, this also produces certain characteristics that are interrelated. Here we find those who can't accept that things go wrong. Quality is important. You've probably noticed that regardless of whether it's a product of modern psychology or the ancient Aztecs in Latin America, these behavioural traits are all associated with the same colour. The colours aren't critical. It's only a way to make it easier for those who aren't familiar with the system to make sense of the profiles. As a consultant, I've trained people in this topic for 20 years, and I've found that the colours facilitate learning. Marston finished researching this topic sometime in the 1930s. Many others have used his research and developed a tool that, according to the most recent data, has been used by nearly 50 million people for the past 35 years. For example, the American Bill Bonstetter made invaluable achievements in creating definitive tools that help analyse the whole individual. In the United States, a company, TTI Success Insights, ttisuccessinsights.com, offers a comprehensive analysis tool. But it's always helpful to remember that though in theory there's no difference between the concept on the page and the practice, in the real world, there's a big difference indeed. I've described the four main traits that Marston pointed out. But remember that most of us are a combination of two colours.